In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so today we begin on this Thanksgiving Sunday an 8-week series about the beginning. Now you may be wondering, those of you who are really keeners, you may be wondering, well, why? Didn't we just over a year ago, look at the whole story of the Bible in like 5 acts, starting in Genesis? And I mean, why? I mean, we got this Bible study thing happening on Thursday nights in November. I mean, we can talk about it there. Why are we doing it here on Sundays? Well, there's a couple of good reasons for that. And one of them is that the rest of the Bible actually assumes that we know the story of Genesis 1 to 11, because that's what we're going to look at, Genesis 1 to 11. And so the whole of the Bible from Genesis 12 right through to Revelations 22 assumes that you know this part of the story. And so that's why we're going to talk about it. You know that when you go see a movie, it would be okay for you to miss the trailers. I know I like the trailers. I kind of think it's kind of cool, but it's really okay for you to go to a movie and miss the trailers. It might even be okay for you to miss the opening credits. But if you walk into a movie 15 or 20 minutes late, you really have a hard time getting your head around what's going on in the movie. I mean, somebody can try to explain it, and that'll help, but to get the whole sense of the picture, you need those first few scenes. Now, there's an exception to this. You know those that Women's Network channel? All those flaky movies that are on there that my wife watches? I can walk in at any point of that movie and say to my wife, "Oh, here, I'll tell you what's going to happen now, and this is what's going to happen." And what? 9 times out of 10, I'm right. But in general, a good movie, the characters are developed and shaped within that 15, 20 minute, that first window of time. And if you miss that part of the movie, if you miss that part of the story, the other stuff, I mean, it may be good and interesting, but it doesn't really make sense. And so that's why we're going to focus on Genesis 1 to 11, and we're going to help you get that part of the story. Then also, another good reason why we want to do this is because our cultures, our society, do not really know and have lost touch with the stories of Genesis 1 to 11. And it really is, as the theme of this whole series is, it is the story that helps us make sense of our stories. It answers so many of the fundamental questions of life. And I mean, there are so many fundamental, but just some of the questions that we have, like, where did we come from? Why are we here? What does it mean to be human? How is it that we as humans can be so creative, compassionate, nurturing, intelligent, and at the same time, humans can be exploitive, murdering, warring, and destructive? How is that? Why do societies rise and make such incredible contributions to advancement, to art and to culture and progress, and then those same societies come crashing down, almost destroying themselves from decay from the inside out? Why is that? And then, of course, where is God in all of this? Where is he? Genesis 1 to 11 shows creation, and especially humanity, in all its greatness and its wretchedness. It really shows us why we need this. It shows us why we need Jesus. Why we need Jesus to raise us up and to heal our hearts and to restore us and to forgive us, where we can experience God's love and forgiveness in that relationship so that we can understand what it means to be in relationship with the living and loving God. And so this Sunday and next Sunday, we will focus on the first part of the story, Genesis 1, 1 to chapter 2, verse 3. This is really a poem. It's really a song. It's not a theological treatise where you can kind of sort out all the ins and outs of who God is. It really gives us a great picture of who God is. But it's not a boom, 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 boom. This is what God is and who he is and how he works. It's also, sorry for the scientists among us, it's not a scientific paper. It does not, you know, tell us about all the details about how we came to be. It does make some significant statements about the forming and the shaping of the cosmos and the beginnings of the earth and humanity, but it is not what we would wish it would be. It is not an explanation of our beginnings to satisfy the 21st century mind. Sorry, folks, it's just not that. I mean, this was written for the people of Israel as they had come out of 400 years of slavery, and they were just kind of getting their heads around who they were to become as the people of God, who God had called them to be, and understanding where they and all the people around them, and this was an ancient Near Eastern world in the 1600s before Christ. And this story was told and shaped in that context. And there are, it's so important for us to understand. And today I hope I'm going to bring in some of the stories of the ancient Near East where we kind of get a sense of what that culture was like, that we would grab a sense of that context so that we would understand what it is God wants us to learn in our context. The Bible claims for creation the sovereign work of God. It claims that he is a God who maintains and sustains the functions of the cosmos and his own purposes within it. This song, it refutes the randomness or the by chance or fate that our culture is so inclined to lean on. This sense of random or, oh well, whatever will be, will be. It affirms that God is the creator, that he created with design and with purpose, and what he created was good. Walter Brueggemann, a theologian who you don't need to remember, but he's a pretty good guy, actually. He's got some pretty interesting perspectives and writings. He came up with this statement, and I didn't get it from him, though I've read some of his stuff. I actually got it from a pastor in Vancouver. His name is Daryl Johnson. He's the pastor of First Baptist Church in Vancouver. And he coined this, well, he didn't coin the phrase, but Walter Brueggemann coined this phrase, the creator creates creation. You're going to hear that a lot today, because that's the thing I want you to kind of grasp and get a handle on. This is a passage of Scripture, Genesis 1:1 to 2, verse 3, that states clearly the creator creates creation. And I've used, like I said, Daryl Johnson, and I'm using a little bit of his framework and ideas of just kind of presenting what he shared in this, but some great things. The universe, with this statement that creator create, what we lost today, that creator creates creation, is a reminder to us that the universe is not an accident. You are not an accident. You are not someone who has come by chance, who has happened by chance. There is a creator behind it all, that all of creation, nature, history is totally dependent on God, that there is nothing in the earthly realm that happens independently of him. The people of God, Moses and his students who wrote this down, they came about this by revelation. They didn't come upon this by reflecting and coming up with this thought, I wonder if this might be a way to explain things. No, this was the Holy Spirit inspired them and revealed to them this truth. And in time when this song was written down, there were other stories of creation. There were other stories that were out there that tried to explain. I mean, the Babylonians, they had their stories of battles among the gods, Marduk and Tiamat. And out of their battle, Marduk kills Tiamat, and her separated body becomes the heavens and the earth. I mean, we read what is in the Bible, but I mean, the people in that time, they thought, wow, Marduk, Tiamat. Yeah, they had a fight and Marduk killed Tiamat and split her body apart, and the heavens and the earth, the skies and all that came. That's how they saw it. I mean, the Egyptians had their songs as well, similar themes, different names. Man, I had such an awesome PowerPoint this morning, too. Just kidding. Don't be distracted by that. I want you to focus on this. Creator creates creation. Humanity was created in these different stories of the ancient Near East. Humanity was created to serve the God's pleasure. The lesser gods were tired of doing work and said, oh man, let's create somebody to do our work. I mean, isn't that why we have kids, right, parents? No, we're a little bit of ancient Near Eastern there, aren't we? No, but that's pretty much what some of the stories tell, that they just create humanity just so that they could do that work that needed to get done that the lesser gods didn't want to do. Often the stories of creation in the ancient Near East played on the idea of conflict. The world was born out of death. The world was born out of anger. The world was born out of violence, and humanity existed at the whim and the wish of the gods. They did whatever they wished, no sense of destiny or purpose, except they served at the gods' pleasure or were disposed of at their displeasure. Through God's revelation, He gave the Israelites another song. He gave them a new song, a song of purpose, a song of destiny and hope. And He revealed a God of intention. He revealed a God of design and relationship, concepts that were totally outside of the worldview of the ancient Near East. And so, like I said, with the help of Daryl Johnson out of this church in Vancouver, I want to make some observations. And it just happens that there's seven days, right? And this will lay the groundwork for the series that we're going to have and perhaps help us a little bit to begin to understand who God is and who we are. Truth is, I might offend some. I hope I don't confuse anybody too much. I will raise questions and wondering, like create conversations perhaps. Now today we won't have Q&A simply because I just don't think we're going to have time. But I want you to write down your questions. Because Julia's preaching next week, and you can ask her. Okay? How's that sound? Reality is that over the course of this whole series, there's going to be questions, and we are going to do Q&A with some regularity. And so even if you do ask a question, and it's not related to next week's message, it's related to this week's, I'll be here next week, so I'll try. So let's jump right in. First observation. Any luck with this? Oh, good. Can you do it? Okay, well then, why don't you just do it? Change it for me. Okay. Don't worry about it. You have it in front of you. Creator creates creation out of nothing. That's the first thing. Out of nothing. Creator creates creation out of nothing. The text speaks of God's activity using the Hebrew word. Now, I'm no Hebrew scholar. In fact, the master's degree that I'm taking at school intentionally is avoiding Hebrew. So I'm really borrowing stuff I've read about Hebrew here, honestly. I want to be just real transparent, okay? That's why Julia can answer the questions next week. You didn't take Hebrew either, right? No. Oh, you did. See, she did. So there we go. The text speaks of God's activity using the Hebrew word bara, bara. And in our Bible, that word is translated throughout this whole text as created. Now, it's important to understand that Hebrew word in Hebrew terms. It's interesting to note that this word bara and created is only attributed to God. It is only God who bara, who creates. And He creates out of nothing. Nothing has come before. There is no analogy or blueprint. It means that He is consistently used, or this meaning is consistently used way beyond the substance or the material. It's not just about kind of creating things out of nothing, but it's also the focus of this word and its use throughout the Old Testament seems to be on organization and assignment of roles and functions. And so there's a big sense of this. It's that out of nothing, there's no analogy, it's almost like God has the design. He designs. He creates. Now, think about art. This is a simple way you can view this in English terms. So, the artist who creates art. So the artist doesn't actually make the canvas that he creates his art on. He doesn't make the paint. But in the same sense, we speak of him as, or she, as creating art. And so there's a sense of handiwork, design. And so God, as the creator, who created, who bara, he is the one out of nothing, he forms and gives a sense of destiny of the roles and the functions. And this is a very important distinction because God creates or bara out of nothing. He establishes dignity and honor to the roles and the functions that he assigns to each part of his creation. And so the creation, as it was read through day one right through to day six, there is a sense of God giving a sense of destiny, a dignity to each one of those parts of his grand creation. We can see this in comparison with other stories and myths surrounding creation. I found this particularly interesting because out of my own Germanic background, there's this Germanic myth, again, of creation. Those stories were out there in that time and in times past. And in this myth of creation, it's described that the world was made from the corpse of Ymir. It almost sounds like an Arab name, but that's the name that they used. I mean, these stories are like, there's a to these stories. But anyways, within this myth, the world was made from the corpse of Ymir, this god who was murdered by his brother Odin and his other brothers. And so in this description of creation, the sea that was created was his blood. The heaven was his skull. And the clouds were his brain. And so here we have this gruesome picture of the origin of the world. And this is declared, this is where we come from. So it is our fate and our destiny to be cruel and evil intentioned. I mean, how can we be blamed for, we have been made from the corpse of Ymir. There's two important messages for us to note. That if God made the world from nothing, then that means that I came from his hands. I was created by him. Creator created creation out of nothing. He has given me myself, entrusted me with gifts, entrusted life to me. When he asks me what I have done with these gifts, with this life that he has given, will I say, well, that's the way the world is. No one gets missed. What I did and didn't do wasn't me at all. It was the world matter that Ymir put there. It was that which messed me up. There's this sense of fate in this story, in this myth of creation. And what we cannot say when we rightly hear the first verses of the Bible, it is not fate that created my destiny. God, who is created out of nothing, established me with dignity and purpose, not by chance or out of a whim. It was not fate. And when we fail and when we miss the mark of his perfection, we can say like the prodigal son and come to him and say, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. And so there is a sense of not being fatalistic, but there is a sense of that God has created out of nothing, giving destiny and purpose and dignity to me and to you. Also, this God who created out of nothing is the Father of Jesus Christ. The Father of Jesus Christ who seeks you and never gives up on you. God is faithful. He never lets us down. The song we just sang, Who Am I, is a reminder to us of how again and again God reaches out to us. He is not like the gods of the ancient Near East or the myths who are entangled in the universal cosmic process. Your God, our God, comes to you and he comes to me, seeking us out, longing to have a relationship. And so the Creator created creation out of nothing, giving meaning and purpose, dignity. The second observation is that the Creator creates creation by speaking. There's no sense of fight. There's no sense of wrestling between other gods. I love the way it says it again and again throughout this passage we just read. Let us create. And let there be light. Let there be the stars. Let there be the lesser light and the greater light. And on there's this sense of he speaks his creation into existence. What a sharp contrast with the creation stories of the ancient Near East, which were flourishing at this time when these words were spoken, when they were written down. They explained creation in terms of battles, heaven and earth, emerging out of the bodies of gods that were defeated. But God's story is, let there be light. And there was light. Let the heavens be filled with the birds. Let the seas swarm with all kinds of sea creatures and fish. Let the lands take on vegetation and grow. Let the animals go and fear and fro. Let them become and be created. Let us make man. And man was created. The character of God, as he reveals himself in creation, is that he speaks. He declares, and it is so. Seven times he says, let there be. And then finally he says in the eighth time, let us make. Later on in our story, we have the Gospel of John, and again we're reminded of the power of God's words when it says, in the beginning was the Word, and all things were made through him. And through his word. The word became flesh and dwelt among us. Again and again, Jesus affirms his power and authority to speak and make all things new. As he speaks words of healing, as he speaks words of forgiveness, he says, go and sin no more. I don't condemn you. Go and sin no more. As he speaks words of restoration, as he speaks the word to the tombstone where Lazarus is hidden, wrapped up in all kinds of cloth for 4 days dead. Don't do it, Jesus. He stinks. Lazarus, come forth. The spoken word, the power of God, declared even in the time that we experience. And so Creator creates creation by speaking his word. Third observation, again, just a very brief one because I'm not really sure myself what to think about this one, but it was one that I wanted to kind of give you the full picture here. Creator creates creation in his divine time. In his divine time, according to his time. God creates according to his timetable in 6 days and then 1 day of rest. Seven being the number of completion and perfection. And it's highlighted in so many different ways in this passage, in the original languages, and even throughout the Old Testament, this sense of perfection, this sense of completion of seven. And so God, in his divine time, sets the timetable, sets the schedule, and there is a sense of when it is done, when it is complete, when it is perfect, it is done. Creator creates creation in a divine way. He forms out of formlessness. He creates fullness out of emptiness. Now, again, I had a great chart here that could have shown you this, but if you look at it, the first 3 days of creation, day 1, 2, and 3, there is a sense that God is creating, bringing form, shape, to something that is formless. It's not there. On the first day, we see that he creates light. He separates light and darkness. On the second day, again, form out of formlessness. The separation of the expanse of the waters and the heavens. And on the third day, the land and the seas are separated, creating the earth. And so there's a sense of form, something taking shape, form out of formlessness. And then I love this last part, the last 3 days, days 4 to 6, there is a sense of, because all these forms and shape, there's still a sense of emptiness. And here we see God bringing fullness to emptiness. These void and empty places are filled. On day 4, the expanse of the heavens are filled with the greater light and the lesser light. The sun, the moons, and the stars, it says. So God created light on the first day, but on the fourth day, he says, yeah, this is what light looks like. And he fills the heavens with light, with the lesser light and the lower light, or the greater light. On day 5, he says, Let the waters be filled with all kinds of sea creatures and fish. The birds fill the sky above the waters and the earth. Again, there's this sense of fullness. Don't miss this, guys. The character of God is about fullness, drawing us, moving us. Why do we long in our spirits and our hearts for more? Because we are created with this sense of God and His fullness, drawing us to that place of being filled. It's right there in the creation story. And so He fills these empty spaces with the birds and the sea creatures. On day six, the land is, well, it's populated with animals and finally with humanity. And how does that part of it end? He says, now go and be fruitful and multiply. You know, I don't know if I've told this story here, but actually, I'm not sure if Connie might even know this. Probably not. Maybe this was after you had left Kitchener. My dad was a pastor in Kitchener, and there was a lot of young adult, young married couples in our church. I mean, there was a number of people, and my dad, well, he took this passage pretty literally. I mean, he had eight kids, okay? He thought it was his responsibility to fulfill this on his own. But the thing is, he wasn't shy about preaching this either. And I remember this conversation around the dinner table, how he was getting really concerned. Got all these young couples, they've been married like for at least 2 years. No, I mean for many years, and you know, there wasn't a lot of kids. And so he preached, be fruitful and multiply. It's God's command. Well, lo and behold, within 9 months, kids started, you know. God blessed these families with kids. Maybe he just needed to release that sense of fullness into the church. No, I'm not going to do that here, but the whole idea is, I'm not exactly sure what I was going at. Right. Continue to grow in fullness. That's what the picture is here. Attest to God's character and his work in us, his promises, and for what we have to long for in fullness. Another observation, Creator creates creation, and it is good. And it is good. Seven times it says it is good. The truth is, it doesn't always feel good. We look around us and we think, well, I don't know. But it began good. It began good. First day, it is good. Well, second day, again, an observation of Bruce Waltke, a theologian, he makes this comment in tongue-in-cheek, even God doesn't like Mondays because it doesn't say it's good. On the third day, he makes up for it. Two times it says, it is good. On the fourth day, it is good. On the fifth day, it is good. On the sixth day, it is very good. And I don't want to steal too much of Julia's thunder because I think she's going to give focus to that next week about the good creation of God. Creator creates creation in his own image. I'm not sure we can fully grasp the truth of that statement in our 21st century world and the potential impact that has on our relationships, that God created humanity in his own image, in his likeness he created them. As I've said a few times already, Genesis was written in a time of the ancient Near East, and it was common to have kings who ruled in the image of a particular god. Take, for instance, the famous King Tut, short for Tutankhamun, is an example of this. His name meant the living image of the god Amun. And so this king was seen, and the kings of the ancient Near East were seen as the living embodiment of a particular god on earth. And so if you wanted to see what that particular god was like, you looked at that god's king, and it served to elevate the king above the ordinariness of every man. And so the writer of Genesis, he takes this reality of the ancient Near Eastern world, and he applies it to his description of the creation of humanity. And with one short statement, he gives every human being the stamp of royalty. He says, man is created in the image of God. In all creation, there is something different about humans. They aren't God, and they aren't going to become God. But in some distinct, intentional, purposeful way, God has put in them his image, his imprint. And we reflect what God is like and who he is. In being God's image bearers, we show all of creation what creation is and what the creation is like. We, you, every one of you, and I, we represent God's handiwork wherever he has placed us. That is cool. You are an image bearer of God. No surprise that Peter, when he writes, he says, you are kings and priests, a holy nation. I digress. Creator creates creation, and then he rests. Again, we've talked about Sabbath and all that stuff a number of different ways over the last year, but this was one that I don't even think Daryl Johnson includes it in his list, but this was something that we've got to talk about that. This was written down, this story, this poem of creation was written down for a people who had lived, eaten, breathed, worked for 400 years. 400 years, that's all they did. And God tells them that rest is a part of creation. Moses or his students, they're writing this song of creation down as God reveals it to them, and it's a different song than the songs they were familiar with. God was calling them into a covenantal relationship unlike any of the gods of the ancient Near East. He was telling them, he was reminding them and underlining it and putting highlighter in it and on the scrolls or wherever they had, he was saying, you matter to me. You matter to me. I love you. And as they sing this song of creation, it comes to a close on the seventh day, this day of completion, this day of perfection. All is done, and God has said it's good, and it's very good. Excuse me. And then God rests. He enjoys. He enjoys what he created because that's what he created it for, so that he could enjoy his creation. It's been observed that the creation of people may be the climax of the 6 days of work, but it's not the conclusion. It's not the end of the song. It is the seventh day that is blessed and is sanctified, which suggests the significance of what happens there. God desires to bring us, bring his people, bring the world, all of his creation, into this experience of rest in this world, in our lives, in our relationships, in ourselves with God. To rest in him, not as a legalistic exercise that we can tick off the box and say, well, I got that taken care of. But no, to live in that sense of God's favor, his peace, and his enjoyment. Communion is a small picture that we've celebrated today, where we can experience Christ's love in the community of his people, remembering what Christ has done, proclaiming his love and his life in you, resting in him. And that, my friends, is the end of this story.